number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
On the nighttime
now. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
All right, I promise I'm not going to make this show morbid and down because of the two iconic losses that we had in the sports world, because I do want to celebrate their legacies. I want to talk about them as people who really made an impact to a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people in Pat Summitt and Buddy Ryan, who passed away on Tuesday. And sometimes we get this in the sports world and in entertainment world for that matter, where we kind of get these deaths where we, you know, and they come together and we sort of put, you know, we process them. We did this with Muhammad Ali. You know, what kind of people were they? What kind of impact did they have? And so I spent a good day today doing that with both Pat Summitt and Buddy Ryan and looking at everything, right? I mean, you know, no one is a saint and no one is a pure angel, and everyone's got their demons. And but when people die, we have a tendency to say all the great things about them. It's natural. We don't only do it to celebrities. We do it to friends and family and whatnot. But one of the things that when you look into somebody's life, when you research into the impact that that person may have, it is remarkable how many people said about Pat Summitt and Buddy Ryan, how much they genuinely loved them and how much they meant to them for their careers and how much they had an impact on them in everything that they do in life. Summitt especially, because she really did something remarkable with her career outside of winning 8 national championships. She propelled women's basketball forward. She took it to a place that a lot of people didn't want to take it. I mean, a lot of people didn't want to take women's basketball and give it the kind of attention it gets today. And she was at the forefront of that, and all sorts of players. I mean, you would expect that. And all, she 30 plus years that she spent in Knoxville, all sorts of players had been impacted by her, but also the Peyton Manning and Magic Johnson and a number of athletes who weren't under her tutelage. Manning was to an extent, because while he was at Tennessee, he went to her for advice on a number of things, but there were athletes who just saw what she meant and the impact that she had and what she was trying to do. Buddy Ryan, the same thing, except with Buddy Ryan, it really centered around the players that played for Buddy Ryan. And Ryan wasn't trying to do something grandiose with the defensive scheme. He wasn't trying to change the face of the league, or he wasn't trying to take it to another level. All Buddy Ryan was doing was putting together the best defense he possibly could with the great talent that he had. But And from a football perspective, Buddy Ryan is a legend when it comes to that sort of orchestrating the defense. The 46 defense of the Bears is something that is unmatched. I mean, we haven't seen that kind of defensive performance. And to be honest with you, with the way defense is played now in the NFL, I doubt we ever will. The physicality of that defense was notorious. The physicality of any Buddy Ryan defense was notorious. But the one thing that stands out with Buddy Ryan was how much his ex-players would die for him, would go to do anything for him, would just, all they wanted to do was make him happy, and how emotional they were when talking about him. You didn't have to go that far to go back to the documentary, the 30 for 30 on the 85 Bears, and listen to Steve McMichael, listen to Mike Singletary, listen to Dan Hampton, listen to them all of them talk about Buddy Ryan, how they carried him off the field after that Super Bowl win, and how much they were devastated when he chose to leave and go be the head coach of the Eagles. It's raw. It's real emotion. And that's something that I think we're going to spend a lot of time tonight celebrating on both of these accounts. It's a very sad day. If you followed these particular icons, if you were a fan of them, if you were affected by them as a fan, it is an extremely sad day. Where I lived in Tennessee, Pat Summitt is a goddess. I mean, she is just, you know, people in that state adore Pat Summitt on any level that you could imagine any athlete being loved in a particular area. You know, every area has those iconic people. And Pat Summitt was that kind of person. In the 5 years that I lived there, when Holly Warlick took over the program, it was still, people still talked about Pat Summitt. People still loved Pat Summitt. People wondered how she was doing. People were praying for her health. And in her last days, you saw the social media rally pray for Pat as she was getting worse and worse. All right, 800-777-2907. Coming over the bottom of this hour, we're going to talk to Lindsay Schnell, SI.com. She wrote a very, very good piece on the legacy of Pat Summitt from a personal perspective, how what Pat Summitt had meant to her. She was a young reporter. She also idolized Pat Summitt when she was a young basketball player. So we'll get her perspective. She wrote a great article at SI.com on this. We'll talk to her about that coming up. We're also going to get into the Kevin Durant free agency, and we're going to do that in hour number two tonight. But to touch on it right now, July 1st is when free agency starts, and Kevin Durant is the big fish in the free agent pond, and everybody is wondering where, you know, what Kevin Durant's camp is thinking and what meetings he's going to have in New York. And as I told you earlier this week, the plan for Durant is not to do the tour, like not to go city to city, get wined and dined, go to the facility, see all the cool Kevin Durant should play here stuff. He is going to be in New York City at the offices of his representatives, and that the teams are going to come to him and that they're going to make a pitch to him. And then they're going to leave. And he had a list of teams that he wants to talk to. Those include Golden State. That includes the San Antonio Spurs. It also includes his Oklahoma City Thunder. But now it's expanded a bit. Boston is going to be talked to. Miami is going to be talked to. And the Clippers are going to be talked to. So he's expanded the list. Not on the list, the Washington Wizards. Not on the list, the LA Lakers. Not yet on the list, the New York Knicks. Now, what are these teams going to pitch Kevin Durant in their meeting with him in New York City? What could they possibly say to Kevin Durant that could get him to sign a deal with them? Because look, in Oklahoma City, he is going on a team that was one win away from the NBA Finals. He's going to watch very closely Russell Westbrook and where Westbrook's going. It's likely he's going to sign a one-year deal with anybody anyway, because with the salary cap getting boosted up over the next 2 years, he's going to be getting a lot of money, when he's able to hit those cap, you know, that cap money. Oklahoma City is the best place for him. But as we know in free agency, sometimes it's not necessarily about dollars and cents. Sometimes it's not necessarily about staying in your ground where you're more comfortable. Sometimes there's other factors. So is Kevin Durant playing the Thunder and thinking that he's better off being somewhere else? Well, there's no indication. There's been no real hint of that. And I'm curious as to how these meetings are going to go. Now, his decision is expected to be on July 9th because he's going on an Asian trip, a promotional trip, so he'll have it all locked up and be done. But in the end, I think everybody who's analyzed the Durant free agency sweepstakes has looked at the situation and said, look, this makes perfect sense to stay in Oklahoma City. You're on a winning team, and you're going to be making a lot more money on these one, you know, if you get these one-year deals and stick around. You know, then there's the Larry Bird rights and all of that. Stay in Oklahoma City. They're building a winning team around you. The Victor Oladipo trade helps the Thunder. If they convince Russell Westbrook to say you're when he becomes a free agent, you're a formidable team in the West all the time. Not just every now and then when you get your cards done right. It is all the time that you'll be a formidable opponent in the Western Conference. And we've seen over the years the sort of ebb and flow of that. While we like Golden State, they're not going to be dominant for the next 7 years. Sure, they may be a very good team. Sure, that may be a tough out. But to hand the Warriors the Western Conference for the next 5 years is insane. The door is open for teams that are built very well, and the Oklahoma City Thunder are built very well. If you want to go to San Antonio, fine, but that's not your team. You want to go to Golden State, fine, that's not your team. You want to go to Boston? Really? Come on. You want to go to the Knicks? What? Come on. Maybe Pat Riley's got something up his sleeve to convince you to come to South Beach. Lord knows he certainly has that card to play. But Durant in Oklahoma City is the best place for him. I've seen stranger things happen in free agency, though. I've done this many, many years. I've seen this happen time and time again where you say, this is the best place for him. Don't go anywhere. You're better off where you're at. I remember preaching this with Robbie Cano for the New York Yankees. Why would Robbie Cano want to go anywhere else? Then he went to Seattle. So I've gone down this road before in all sports. But I think when you look logistically, it seems that Durant's best spot is where he is right now. But again, teams are going to make their pitch. And maybe they're making their pitch for when, you know, hey, look, when you sign that one-year deal with Oklahoma City so you can maximize your value when the cap goes up, consider us down the road. We're going to be still building. We're still going to be putting together. But we just want you to know that when the time comes, when the cap's up and you're at this, when you're at this spot again, guess what? We're going to be right here showing you all the things that we are doing to continue to build a winner here. Yeah, maybe that's what the meetings in New York are all about. I don't know. 800-777-2907 on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Especially if you want to talk about the two icons we lost on Tuesday, both Pat Summitt and Buddy Ryan. And we'll talk about both of those next. I'm Tony D. It's Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, glad you can be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio, taking you through the night tonight. All right, so we lost Pat Summitt and Buddy Ryan. I told you earlier tonight, I looked at these two people and these really iconic people in the sports world, because with Pat Summitt, what she did for women's basketball was just incredible. I mean, where she took the sport and where she helped take the sport. But then Buddy Ryan also. What he meant to those Chicago Bears and what he did in the with that 85 team, and what he, you know, the kind of checkered, colorful checkered pass that he had in the league, getting into a fight with Kevin Gilbride and his battles with Mike Ditka, and, you know, giving us Rex and Rob Ryan, who are still colorful personalities. So I did a lot of, I read a lot today about those two, and I read a lot about their, you know, what, how people viewed them. And I came to the, you know, the, it didn't take long for me to realize, boy, they were just both genuinely loved by the people who knew them and knew them best. I'm going to start with Pat Summitt, because Pat Summitt took women's basketball and put it to a place where it is today, and did it with a tenacity, a real focus, and a real goal-oriented approach of getting women's college basketball somehow on a larger map than it was. She didn't invent the game. She didn't start the game, but it certainly wasn't in a good spot compared to today, back when she was playing. It didn't get a lot of media attention. It didn't get a lot. It wasn't getting any net, you know, television attention. And yet she fought for the rights. She fought for coverage. She fought for coverage for people to come and watch her Lady Vols play. And she defined the Lady Volunteers brand, so much so that if you would have said, oh, I don't know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, if you would have said, hey, you know what? Tennessee football is big, but women's basketball on this campus will be as big, you would have won a ton of bets, a ton of bets. The Lady Vols are a gigantic sports entity in that state because of the national championships that Pat Summitt won, but also because of Pat Summitt herself. And people have criticized the part, you know, look, hey, when you're growing something and you're making a name for yourself and you're accumulating all the better talent and you're beating teams 95-38, yeah, you're going to pile up a bunch of wins, you're going to pile up a bunch of national championships. But she was more than that. She was more than just winning games and winning titles. She again was at the forefront of putting this sport on a map, putting this sport on television, putting this sport and giving it some respectability. Now, I have a daughter, and let me just tell you firsthand, that is a big deal for me. It wasn't a big deal maybe 20 years ago. I didn't really think much of it, right? As women's basketball was growing and the WNBA was starting up and had a couple of years under its belt, you know, I didn't think much about the progress of women's basketball. But then, you know, you realize how impactful this was. And then having a little girl who's 10 and loves sports, I'm very thankful that my life had a Pat Summitt in it in some respects. Because now when my daughter plays, she is respected. She can be respected because Pat Summitt changed the way that women's college basketball was accepted. And I think that is a real legacy-defining moment in her career. It, again, it isn't about, hey, look, she won all these national titles. Look, she was winning over 1,000 games, most in NCAA Division I basketball. Those are just standard stuff that we use, right? That's sort of, here are the bullet points of accomplishment. But on a larger level, Summit meant there is an acceptance of a sport that didn't get it 30 years ago, that didn't get it 35 years ago. And over time, she progressed it so that there could be a sold-out arena to watch women's championship games. And again, her program in the South became as big as any of the sports they had at Tennessee. It's really remarkable, and it's something you can't really duplicate. You couldn't really duplicate it because it just started to come in over time. Now, I said earlier tonight that everyone's going to get painted in a real angelic light. Her and Gino Auriemma didn't get along. It was very, very testy, and it was real. It wasn't the friendly rivalry. It wasn't a respected, like, well, we really respect each other, and, you know, in the end, we can sit down and have a good talk. There was real animosity between those two. Auriemma right now is the king of women's basketball. But in order to take a throne, there had to have been somebody on it first, and that was Pat Summitt. She was really hard on her players, but she got the best out of them. And there's not a bad word about Pat Summitt and the way she handled those girls. The way she disciplined them, the way she yelled at them, the way she got them to do the best she possibly can. I really wish my daughter, when whatever sport she wants to play, has a coach like Pat Summitt. That isn't interested in how she feels and in making sure that she's happy. That just doesn't stop saying, are you doing this the best you possibly can? And I don't care if you hate me. And I don't care if it drives you crazy. And I don't care if deep down you want to leave or you want to quit. I will be on top of you until you know and I know you've done your best. That's Pat Summitt. I pray my daughter gets a coach like that. I really do. Because I don't want my daughter to get a coach that is just all interested in making sure she's happy. Because there were a lot of women on that Tennessee team that at times were not happy. And yet, today, they're sad and they really miss their coach. And they really wish the woman that changed their lives could be there for one more piece of advice. Even as they are entering adulthood and have kids of their own. Peyton Manning talked about how she was a coach to him. Because in his time at Tennessee, she was instrumental in advice that she gave a young quarterback that was pursuing a professional goal. And also, do I stay in college? And Peyton Manning stayed in that senior year in college, and he talked to Pat Summitt about that. Imagine that. A first-round NFL pick talking to a women's basketball coach about whether or not he should pursue a professional career. You're never going to find that anywhere. You won't find that story anywhere else. But that was Pat Summitt. All right, we'll get more into Buddy Ryan, too, because I want to talk about his legacy. That's coming up later in the hour. Lindsay Schnell is going to join us from SI.com. Wrote a really powerful piece on her personal interaction with Pat Summitt. We'll talk to her about that and basically also the legacy. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907, the number to join us tonight. We still got a lot of other things that we're going to get to. Again, I said this earlier. I don't want to make this not depressing or anything like that. These are two great figures in sports that have a lot to celebrate, and there's a lot of great things that they've done, and that's kind of the goal tonight. Even with Buddy Ryan, who again had his moments where people questioned him, had his moments where people wondered where he was thinking, what he was doing, but he had a lasting impact too on the lives that he touched. So we're going to continue that conversation. But coming up next, again, Lindsay Schnell is going to join us, SI.com, on her interactions with Pat Summitt, and really what, in terms of a young woman who's playing basketball, what that figure was like, what that kind of personality was, because man, that icy stare that she had, the way she could like really kind of drive it home. But deep down, there was a kindness there. There was a woman there that really wanted to get to know people and really wanted to talk to people. So Lindsay will share her story coming up next. 800-777-2907. Don't forget, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. We'll also get into Jordan Spieth's comments about that U.S. Open debacle on that penalty and how he would have handled what Dustin Johnson had to go through. And also Major League Baseball. My God, what happened in New York could never happen again. We've got all that coming up. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio and continuing our conversation on the death of Pat Summitt, who really define the Lady Volunteers brand and image and what she's done for women's basketball in her entire career. Lindsay Snell joins us from SI.com, who wrote a great piece on this, her personal recollections with Coach Summit, and she joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, Lindsay?
Well, I'm doing okay. It's been a sad day, but other than that, I'm doing well.
Yeah, it's for people who are looking at Coach Summit and they say, here are the national titles, here's how she changed the game, here's how she brought women's basketball to the forefront. Those are all sort of fact-based analysis of her life. But for you, what did Coach Summit mean to you?
She was so inspirational, I think, to, you know, everyone from my generation. I read her books for the first time when I was 11 years old. You know, my mom, I grew up in a basketball family. My dad was a coach forever, a junior college coach, and my mom used to be a big-time official. She ref in the Pac-10 and the ABL, and she bought me Pat Summit's books, and I was just enamored with her and Tennessee and reading all these things about how it doesn't matter if you're a female. You can do anything that you want, and she demonstrated that every day with her team. And you know, we look at women's basketball now, and every game, every NCAA tournament game is on TV. There are a lot of coaches who are paid a lot of hundreds and thousands of dollars. Shoe contracts are good for women's teams. Pat did all of that. She made people pay attention. She said, you know, Diana Taurasi is considered the greatest player in the world, and Diana played at UConn. But I really believe that we have that bar because Tennessee did it first. Pat did it first, and forever Shamiqua Holtzclaw was who people, you know, measured themselves against. And that rivalry with UConn, it grew the game so much. The fact that her and Gino were not on each other's Christmas card lists played a role in that. And she was just so inspiring. And then you hear all these stories today. There have obviously been a ton. I had a personal encounter with her, so I can attest to this. She was so kind and so warm. And I think a lot of times we have this idea that to be really successful, especially in athletics, you have to be a mean person. And she certainly was known for being really tough, but so, so kind. And that will be what people remember about her. You know, this weekend in Knoxville, tons of players flew in to see her, and friends and coaches. And I don't think people were standing around talking about, you know, when they won this game and they won this trophy, but they were talking about her as a human being.
You got to spend some time with her, and I don't mean to put the burden on you to pry into the way she thought, but did you get the feeling that she was she ever surprised by where the sport went? You know, when she started, she was fighting for a sport that, with all due respect, nobody wanted to have anything to do with on a network level, on a television level. And now there's a women's professional basketball league. Was she surprised by that, or was she always thinking, "Is this could be where this sport could go?"
I think she was, you know, forever an optimist about that. She was raised by a man who never put limitations on her because she was a girl. You know, it's this famous story about her father moved their family to a different high school area in the county so that she could attend a high school with a girls' basketball team because he believed she could play just like her brothers. All her older brothers were good athletes. So I think that she just expected it to happen. I don't think she was surprised. I don't think she was mad at how long it took. It was just, this is what we deserve. And, you know, when there's that famous quote when she was asked about, would you ever coach the men? And she said, why is that considered a step up? You know, she believed what she was doing was so important. And I, obviously it was, when you look at the number of young women she inspired. But I also think that a big part of who she was, she transcended the game. I mean, today on Twitter, on ESPN, all these men are talking about the respect they had for her, male athletes and coaches. Peyton Manning, obviously, who's been extremely successful in the NFL, he was one of her biggest fans. Her ability to make men not only pay attention but respect what they were doing, I think, speaks volumes about what she did.
What was the personality that she had that enabled her to not only just be a coach, but also to be the pioneer that the sport needed to take it to the next level, to keep growing, to keep demanding that people pay attention to it? What was the personality that she had that enabled her to be the pioneer that she was?
Well, I think that she struck this great balance of she was tough, she was hard-nosed, she had that famous icy stare, but she talks about this in her books. She was also a sorority girl, and she was from the South, and she knew how to be charming. And so I think that people were intimidated by Pat when she walked in the room, but you couldn't help but like her. She made everyone feel important. And so when she would say to someone, we need to do this, we got to win this game, or, you know, I deserve this much money, people had to listen to her. But I think that she was so much more than a coach. You know, she talked all that, you know, her greatest accomplishment, and she talked about this all the time, was being a mother. You know, she loved being a mom. And so I think that she just, and she was there at the right time with Title IX, and we needed, you know, a face of the game. Like, women's basketball needed someone to kind of pick up the flag and be willing to wave it for the sport. And she did it because I don't think she knew how to do anything else but work really hard.
Lindsay Schnell joins us, SI.com. She wrote a very, very good piece on Pat Summitt and her personal recollections and her personal experience with Pat. I urge you to check it out. From the standpoint of her relationship with Gina Auriemma, it was very, very testy. How would you define that as those two rivals really grew into something in the sports world?
I think they're just really different personalities. Gino's really brash and doesn't have much of a filter, and it's awesome. I think he has a huge heart. His players adore him. And Pat did have a filter, and she was, you know, going back to that Southern charm and hospitality. And obviously, you know, their relationship soured at one point because they canceled the series with each other, but it's a pretty, you know, well-known story about it. I believe it was the 2012 Final Four. So after her diagnosis and her final season at Tennessee, that they shared a hug. And I think it was just born out of, you know, great competition. And when Gino won, I don't remember what title it was, someone said something about John Wooden. And did he think he could win as many titles as Wooden or whatever? And Gina said, the only person I compare myself to is Pat Summitt, because she had done it first. And so I think that while they had this, I wrote it as, you know, the famous frosty relationship, I think that they had a deep respect for each other and what the other one did. And they understood that they both made the game better. But Gina also knows that UConn wouldn't be what it is, women's basketball wouldn't be what it is without Pat.
I did want to ask you about your personal contact with her and your conversations that you wrote out in the piece. And you said you were able to spend some time with her, talking to her. You're a little nervous going up to her. But what was the thing you gained from that? Did you learn anything new? You had read her book, but did you learn a lot from that one-on-one time that you had?
Yeah, the first time that I met her, I had just finished my freshman year of college. She was in Portland, where I live, at a local AAU tournament, and walked up to her. And I think the thing that I was blown away by was her kindness. You know, here I am, this 19-year-old kid, like, she's in the gym watching a ton of top prospects. There are all these coaching friends around. And, you know, she talked to me for an hour asking me, you know, what I thought about certain players and what I wanted to do. And it made me walk away, you know, realizing that it doesn't matter how great your accomplishments are. It's all about how you treat people, right? Because you could have that interaction with just someone you meet on the street, and it could have a lasting impact on you.
Lindsay, it has been a pleasure. You've done a great job bringing her life to our listeners here. I really appreciate your time, and great article again.
Thank you so much.
All right, coming up next, what Jordan Spieth would have done differently if he was assessed that penalty that Dustin Johnson had to take at the Open. That's next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio, 800-777-2907. I don't know how many people on our network heard that last promo on that app that Steve Zabin was talking about. I just listened. I did not know that existed, and now I want to find that immediately because I have about 10 people in my life I would love to spoil Game of Thrones for. Is that not the cruelest thing in the world? That, like, outside of, you know, committing crimes. Spoiling television shows?
Yeah, that's
Oh, that's great.
I don't know if it gets much worse than that as, like, just something that's not too serious, but people take very seriously.
I don't get it. I do not get it to this day how people just do not understand. You cannot run to Facebook and Twitter when something, like, awesome happens in a show and start losing. You just can't. It's so uncool to do that. My sister is notorious for this. If something happens in Game of Thrones or something like that or whatever TV show that we both binge watch, she will just lose it on Facebook, and I have to kind of go, calm down. You can't do that. I haven't seen it. Give me 24 hours. I think the rule is like 24 hours. Just give people time. Just chill for crying. I said, I live on the East Coast. You live on the West Coast. You don't see me spoiling it for you. That sounds like a multi-million-dollar app.
Oh, that's huge.
Are you kidding? That's the ultimate revenge now. It's like, oh, yeah, you like Scandal? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you like Game of Thrones? That's fantastic. Game of Thrones is the worst, though. It's the worst.
Yeah, I see people, everybody tweets about it.
Everybody.
Like,
everybody.
Live tweeting it.
It's like Walking Dead, too. Walking Dead is another one. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Glenn's dead. No, he's not. Yes, he is. I don't know. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
See, like, I'm someone, I really love watching TV shows. Like, I watch Walking Dead. I don't watch Game of Thrones. But I don't get into it that much.
I don't either.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't live tweet a show. I can't, you know, I'm not going to throw, I don't even talk about anything outside of maybe sports and family on Facebook.
Yeah, my sister loves, you know, she's out in L.A. and she loves entertainment and Oscars her thing and whatnot. So if a character dies, let's say, I don't know, somebody on Walking Dead dies or Game of Thrones or something, she'll say, like, I'm so devastated. I'm like, really? It's a TV show, for crying out. What do you mean you're devastated? It's a television program. But she'll go crazy on that stuff. I have to decompress after tonight's episode. It's a television show. How could you get that worked up over it?
Right.
It's like there's an initial shock, like, oh, I can't believe they did that. But my God, I don't need therapy when something happens on a TV show.
I still don't know. I've watched a lot of, you know, TV shows from beginning to end, and I can't really think of moments where I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. I can think of one off the top of my head. It was from Sons of Anarchy.
And yeah, Sons of Anarchy was really
ahead of that
moment.
Because of the way Opie died in prison.
Yeah, that was one.
And that was just because of the brutality of it.
There was this DJ in, God, where was she? I want to say Atlanta. I want to say Georgia, maybe just somewhere in Georgia, maybe outside Atlanta. Walking Dead is filmed in Atlanta. And for those of you who don't watch the show, let me just say this. The last season ended on a massive cliffhanger. Like, there was all of the characters, and one of them was chosen to die, but they didn't show you who's going to die. So when the show comes back in October, you know, they're going to tell you who's going to die, right?
It's
so
people, nobody.
Yeah, I know. Right? It's so there's all this speculation, right? So this DJ in, I don't want to say it was Atlanta because I don't think she was in a big market. I think she was just like maybe, you know, some smaller station. Anyway, she reads this really cool story about how two of the Walking Dead stars were on their way to the set and how there was a stranded motorist, and they were riding motorcycles, and they pulled over to sort of get them help and to help them, you know, get their car back up on the road. And people noticed it was these guys, and they took all these pictures and, you know, whatnot, and signed autographs, and they were really cool. So she's just doing this as a throwaway story, right? She's just casually, oh, isn't this great? So-and-so and so-and-so are on their way to the set of The Walking Dead. All of a sudden, the phone rings off the hook. because people were like, wait a minute. If they're going to the set, that means they're going to live. That means they're not dead. And one of them was one character that many is speculating is going to die. So people wanted to know more about the story, and she didn't know what to do because she said, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I don't really watch the show, but apparently this was a big deal. This was a really big deal that these two people were seen. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, hold on. If you're going to try to keep a cliffhanger, wouldn't you lock these actors down so that they didn't have to drive to the set like I drive to work?
You would think so.
Wouldn't you say, like, look, we've got a cliffhanger and we don't want to spoil it, so we're going to be filming the new season. So here's the deal. Here's a trailer. You ain't leaving. So good luck. You're going to stay there until the entire time that we're done shooting this thing. Because you got to keep that. You've got to keep that under wraps. You can't have these actors walking around town showing up for work while you're telling America to, you know, that you've got one of these characters dead. You can't do that. But people love that kind of stuff. People love figuring stuff out and the clues and all that good stuff. So, all right, Jordan Spieth. I got to get to this coming up in the next hour. Jordan Spieth was asked about how he would have handled the Dustin Johnson penalty fiasco. And I love Spieth. That squeaky clean image of Jordan Spieth. Have you noticed that it's been eroding over the last, year or so? Like, he's getting a little bit more aggravated, a little bit more. He's showing a little different kind of side than the, aw, shucks, aw, gee, I can't believe I won the Masters. This is so cool. And me and my caddy were just on the same team, and everybody here is just together. This is so wonderful. I like this Jordan Spieth that is willing to say, as one of the more powerful people in the sport, I should be speaking out on this kind of stuff to try to maybe enact change or an impact. Well, I'll tell you what he said coming up next. And Major League Baseball should be absolutely embarrassed about what happened in New York on Monday night into Tuesday morning, but will they actually change anything regarding their arcane rain delay rule? That's coming up as well. Plus, we'll talk Kevin Durant's free agency with Kevin Horn of the Oklahoman. That's all coming up in Hour 2, Yahoo Sports Radio.